This is a podcast about adapting, overcoming, and thriving in life and business. I'm your host, Kirsty O'Brien, mum of four and meditation and mindfulness practitioner. And this is exactly where you're meant to be if you're ready to ditch the guilt and self-doubt and start showing up as the woman you were meant to be. This is the Mindful AF in Life and Business podcast.
We don't actually feel worthy of our success. And so we feel that at one day or one point in time, we're going to be exposed as being a fraud. Okay, so today I have with me Alison Shamir, who is a career coach and a confidence and imposter syndrome specialist, which is initially what drew me to Alison's work. And Alison empowers women with the knowledge, tools, and methods they need to overcome imposter syndrome, build unshakable confidence, and achieve the success they truly want. What a wonderful thing you do. And Alison's work has been featured on Studio 10, Today Extra, Nine Honey, and so many other digital platforms. So I'm incredibly grateful for Alison's time today. And you had me at unshakable confidence, because I think over the years I've tried to work very hard on building that. How are you, Alison?
I'm really well, and thank you for that very kind introduction. I'm absolutely thrilled to be here, so thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, I think it's so important, and I just love even how you really draw attention to the fact of being a specialist in confidence and imposter syndrome. And so before we like really dive into imposter syndrome, because you are the expert, I just sort of thought maybe you could begin by like telling us a little bit of like what brought you here to helping women build unshakable confidence and part of your journey to date.
Yes, absolutely. So for me, my confidence journey started quite young, and I share this story in some of the work that I do, but it actually developed out of quite a dark place. So my parents had a really messy and ugly divorce when I was younger, and out of that and some things that happened in the subsequent years, I had to be very independent and essentially fend for myself a lot at a very young age. And while this was happening, I guess the silver linings that were forming, which I realized later in life, was it was really building my confidence and also building my resilience at a young age. And then so fast forward into, you know, my teenage years and into my adult years, I had this, I guess, quite strong foundation of confidence. And as I grew older and more aware of it, then I was able to see that it certainly was helping me in my career and sort of what I was building up to. And then fast forward, you know, into an adult and building my corporate career. So before I launched my own business, I had a 15-year corporate career, primarily in the technology sector, as well as working in media and publishing as well. And I realized just how much my confidence was assisting my career progression, from being confident to speak up in meetings, to leading teams, I held leadership positions, to negotiating salary increases, to changing roles and chasing new jobs, and you know, a bunch of other things in between. But what I also saw was a lot of women around me at all different levels who weren't confident, or who were essentially holding themselves back. And when I really started to look at that and sort of, you know, speak and talk to my teams and my network, what I really started to see was a lack of confidence as a widespread thing, even in women who were very capable, were talented, were smarter than me, you know, on paper, or had more credentials. But I just found that myself and other confident women could really push ahead in their careers, and it became, I guess, a bit of a skill that I saw could be used as a bit of a superpower for those that had it. On the flip side, if you had a lack of confidence, it really held you back and was a bit of an internal barrier. So that's a bit of the story around confidence. And I, as someone who's held leadership positions, I really wanted to empower women from very early on in my career to just back themselves, to go after the things that they wanted, to not hold themselves back. Because as women, and anyone listening to this will know, we often still face external barriers. So there are still glass ceilings, unfortunately, in certain corporate sectors. There are challenges from people, organizations, and I call those external barriers. And so we need to be able to face those. What I didn't want to see is women hold themselves back because of internal barriers. And I class a lack of confidence or fear or things like imposter syndrome taking over as internal barriers. And I believe we have absolute control over changing those and owning those and managing those and growing those. And that is really what led me down that path, is I wanted to help women. I knew that I could help them. I believed I had some value to add. And that was my journey, which then prompted me to leave the corporate world, get certified in coaching, do some other training behind the scenes, and really get ready to do this as a career. And that journey started about 3 years ago. And here I am today, right, specializing in these areas. And there's a long history with imposter syndrome as well, which I'm sure we'll get to in this interview. But I knew that if I launched my own business and I became a coach and speaker, which is what I wanted to become, that these were the two areas that I believe I could add the most value. And so that's a bit of the journey, the kind of how it started, I guess, how it's going. And now I get to speak to, you know, wonderful people like you as well, and be on this podcast and kind of share this message, which I am incredibly passionate about. It's what I do every single day, is work under these two pillars of confidence and imposter syndrome. So thanks again for having me and actually letting me share a bit of my story.
Amazing. And I think that anybody can relate to having a lack of confidence at one point in their life, whether it's lasting or just in a certain time because of a certain reason or whatever. And it really does have you holding yourself back and changing the way you show up and decisions that you make. And so, and I mean, I can relate, like I battled with, that was always my biggest hurdle in growing in my life, was my lack of confidence. And it was only until I really just like realized, because I think too, sometimes we find reasons that we think it's other things other than confidence, because we might feel like, oh, I feel good about myself, or I've got good friendships, or I've got a great relationship. It can't be my confidence. But, you know, you would probably see that it definitely can show up in different ways. And I think too that there can be a little bit of confusion around what is imposter syndrome as well. Mm-hmm. Is it self-doubt? Or so I thought maybe we could start by just you really identifying what is imposter syndrome.
Yeah, absolutely. And firstly, you're absolutely right about confidence being situational, and it is. And sometimes we can get confused around what's holding us back, because we can be, to your point, confident in some areas of our life and then lacking confidence in other areas, and we can't quite put the pieces together. But confidence is very important, because it also contributes to allowing you to manage things like imposter syndrome better if, in fact, you do suffer from that or other forms of self-doubt. And to answer your question, so imposter syndrome is actually a series of feelings that develop in an individual, and then it quickly turns into an internalized and persistent fear. And this fear makes you doubt your own skills, talent, and accomplishments, despite a ton of evidence to prove your competence. So in spite of your amazing work experience or your certifications, accreditations, education, all the other wonderful things that you've done to get to where you are in your life and your career, the imposter syndrome fear blocks you from connecting with that in those moments. And so because we can't connect with it, or we feel that we've got lucky or we haven't earned it and all these other crazy things, it makes us feel we don't actually feel worthy of our success. And so we feel that at one day or one point in time, we're going to be exposed as being a fraud. And so that's where the name imposter syndrome comes from. It's an internal fear that makes us doubt our own skills and success despite evidence. So we're blocked from seeing it. We don't feel worthy, and we feel like we're going to be exposed as a fraud. So it's a very unique fear. It has very sort of set guidelines, and it does impact, you know, men and women, but is predominantly researched, found, discussed in high-performing women. And by high-performing, I mean those of us who are looking to push our comfort zone, looking to do new things in an existing role, perhaps launch a new business or a new role, do something for the first time, etc. So that kind of falls into the high performance bracket. You by no means have to be a CEO or, you know, anything which is considered at the top of the pyramid to experience imposter syndrome. You just need to be pushing some thresholds and looking to grow yourself.
Ah, interesting. And so did you find that you experienced imposter syndrome at any point, or you witnessed it around you?
No, I myself experienced imposter syndrome. Probably I've had three major, what I call major bouts of it in my career. And what then led me to this point in time in my career is it was roughly 8 years ago, I had a major bout of imposter syndrome when I was essentially at the height of my corporate career. So great role, Sydney CBD, you know, sort of living the corporate dream, I guess, you know, very happy. And I had a huge case of imposter syndrome, and it actually drove me to have quite a severe panic attack at work. And it was an awful, awful experience. Now, I just want to say imposter syndrome certainly doesn't drive everyone to panic attacks. And I know we'll talk more about sort of symptoms and behaviors later, but this is what happened to me. And when I went home from work that day, and it was a very, very bad day, and I dusted myself off, I thought to myself, you know, what is this? What's happening to me? And I realized that it had happened a couple of other times in my career. And I thought, this just can't be normal. You know, this has to be something. And that was really the catalyst for me to go away and do my own research and go, what is this? What's happening? And that's what led me to find that actually this thing, this series of feelings, this fear had a name, and that name was imposter syndrome or imposter phenomenon, as it was first called and is still classed. So if you hear both, they technically mean the same thing. And then I realized, and so that started, and I call this in some of my talks, my on again, off again relationship, a deeper relationship with imposter syndrome. So the last 8 years I've dedicated my time in my career and now in my own business to understanding as much as I can about it, its history, its origins, the founding psychologists, literature, research, experts, psychotherapists, psychologists. I've immersed myself in it to understand it, to be able to manage myself through it. And now in the last 2 years in my own business, I help other women do the same. So I certainly did not escape imposter syndrome, but now I have gotten myself to a point where I can manage it. And also keeping my confidence high, hence the confidence piece as well, allows me to be better positioned to manage it. And this is why they're my two specialist areas, because the more confident you are, the better equipped you are to deal with imposter syndrome or other forms of fear and self-doubt. It will not stop them from creeping up. That's something on shift. But when they do creep up, you will have greater awareness, greater clarity over what's going on, and you will have some tools or some ways to move yourself to action, which is what confidence is built off, to get through it faster. So it might knock you down, but you'll be able to pick yourself up much quicker than somebody with low confidence.
Oh, 100%. And it's about that, as you just touched on then, isn't it, that resilience, because things... And once we have that self-awareness around what we're experiencing, and then we're able to build that resilience to bounce back from it, because I sort of look at my anxiety the same. I don't feel like there's a cure, but I feel like I can heal it. It will appear at certain times in my life, but the more my awareness is deepened around it, I know that that's what it is, and I can see it for what it is rather than feeling like it's me. and bounce back from it. And I guess that's the important thing. So many of those characteristics associated with imposter syndrome, we can end up defining ourselves through that lens, can't we? Actually, yes. Feeling like I'm not worthy and I don't deserve this. And that just ends up feeling like how we feel about ourselves rather than understanding that it's those fears.
Exactly right. And you're spot on, because imposter syndrome is tied to self-worth. Because if you're somebody who experiences imposter syndrome, and it's estimated that imposter syndrome affects around 70% of people, so it isn't 100%. And this is something that I'm really passionate about you know, speaking about, which is why I'm really, really happy to be on this podcast with you, is there's been lots of literature recently around people saying, oh, you know, we all experience self-doubt. We all feel like imposters at times. And it's simply not true. I meet women all the time who I'm coaching or speaking to, perhaps around confidence or other forms of high performance, where they want me to be their coach, but they're not suffering from imposter syndrome. But then I have the other half of my business and people who are. So it's not in everybody, but it is in a high amount of people. And it is tied to self-worth. So back to what you're saying, if you're experiencing imposter syndrome, the fear is making you feel like you're not worthy of your success, that you didn't get to where you are, or you don't, or you, the opportunity that's on the table for you right now, you're not deserving of it because somehow you got to where you are by chance, by luck, by someone opening a door for you, or all these other third parties other than the hard work and amazing work that you've done to get yourself there. So it directly links back to self-worth. And this is an important thing. So for some reason, because of some trigger at some point in time, now or in your past, you feel like you're not worthy of what you're achieving. So you're absolutely right. And it can be a really dangerous spiral in that if imposter syndrome is left to fester, so if you're someone experiencing imposter syndrome, and through listening to this or hearing about it in other ways, you go, gosh, actually, that's what I'm doing. If you don't learn ways, tools, tips to start to manage it, or maybe one day overcome it, it will always consume you. It does not go away on its own. And when I say always consume you, not every minute of the day, but when you are triggered and when that event or situation happens that makes you feel like an imposter, that will keep happening no matter how successful you get. Even if you get to the top of your game, or, you know, the best in your role, or you own a great business, or you have a great family, you have the partner that you want, however it's affecting you, you will always have those imposter traits if you don't learn to manage it. And that's why I'm really passionate about the work that I do, is giving people the insight, the tools, the guidance, whatever I can, so they can, you know, build that awareness, as you've said, be mindful that this is happening, own it and go, okay, I know what this is. It has a name. I'm not alone. And I know I can do things to overcome it or manage it. So, you know, that's really the, you know, the core pillar of what I do, because absolutely attacks self-worth. And that's what makes it a unique fear. And that's what makes it one of the differences from just standard self-doubt as well.
Interesting. And because we get triggered so much, don't we? And until we realize, like you said, that we can actually identify when we're triggered, what we're experiencing, then we can start to make the link. And so you just touched on that it's very different to self-doubt. Do you see a lot of people confusing self-doubt with imposter syndrome?
Yes, I do. And I see a lot of people who talk about imposter syndrome as just self-doubt and directly linking it together. And as someone like me who specializes in it, obviously I really don't like seeing that, because it confuses. It confuses people. It confuses the audience. And the people who are truly suffering from imposter syndrome then kind of get lost in not knowing what it truly is. And therefore, they might not seek the right help or the right treatment, or they might be doing tasks that are not really going to help them in that moment, depending on their trigger and depending on what it is. So they are different. And I guess the best way for me to explain it today is that self-doubt is a symptom of imposter syndrome. So if you're experiencing imposter syndrome, you doubt, as I said earlier, your own skills, your talent, your accomplishments, and you can have this chronic self-doubt despite evidence. And you doubt everything. You doubt how you got where you are. You doubt your ability to move forward, because what's underlying all of that is this ongoing fear that you're going to be exposed as a fraud. So you think, you know, if I do go and take that opportunity, they're going to know I'm a fraud and I faked my whole way into this opportunity. You know, so everything you're doing revolves around holding yourself back so you're not exposed as a fraud, which of course is all in your mind because it's this imposter fear talking. But whereas standard self-doubt isn't directly connected as much to your self-worth, and it's situational. So I'll give an example. So if you're someone who's just, you know, having a bout of self-doubt, so you're not experiencing imposter syndrome, you're just doubting yourself, what might happen is you're at work and, you know, you're doing really well, and your boss comes along and says, you know, hi, Kirsty, you know, we've got this new project and I want you to lead it. I think you're the best woman for the job. Now, self-doubt, you'll say to yourself, oh, I've never led a team. I'm not sure if I can do this. You know, I'm going to have to think about it. And you're looking in the situation. You're looking at the moment. But what you're not doing is doubting your entire history. You're not going, oh my God, if I take this, they're going to know I'm a fraud. Oh my God, I faked my whole way here, so I can't take this project because then everyone will know that I'm silly and I actually don't know what I'm talking about. And I've successfully hidden that for so long. That's the imposter syndrome talking, where someone with just standard self-doubt will go, oh, I'm not sure if I can lead this project. Like, my work's pretty good. I'm pretty happy with it, but I'm cool if they actually pick somebody else to lead this. So right now I'm going to say no. So self-doubt becomes situational. You don't doubt everything about what got you there. You don't have an ongoing fear of being exposed as a fraud or not knowing enough. You're just really assessing the opportunity that's presented to you in the moment. And they're sort of the key differences that I wanted to share. So imposter syndrome takes self-doubt and it magnifies it, and it makes you doubt everything from how you got there to how you're going in the moment to how you'll perform in the future. It's a 360 doubt, whereas self-doubt on its own can be situational, the topic at hand, and you can go, I don't know if I can lead this project, but hey, I'm really good at all this stuff over here, so I'll just continue doing that. And then you go back to whatever else that you were doing, but you don't feel like you're going to be exposed as a fraud. If you feel like you're going to be exposed as not knowing enough or a fraud, it's imposter syndrome. If it crosses that boundary. If it's a situational self-doubt, you can move on easily, you don't overthink, you're not self-sabotaging, you just go back to what you're doing or think about it and go, not really sure if I can do it, but I'm going to give it a crack, then that can be standard self-doubt.
And that's, I'm so happy that you clarified that, because that is such a huge distinction, and so much the lines are blurred, I think, between self-doubt and imposter syndrome. And people just feeling like, oh, it's just a bit of self-doubt. But when you explain it like that, imposter syndrome is so encompassing and so heavy on someone's entire life that, yes, you know, to be living with it, you can understand how it can then begin to affect all of your life, not just at work. And I suppose that's difficult for people experiencing too, because they leave work and then at home they're probably still feeling those same feelings of not feeling worthy, and it's just like a heaviness that stays with them until they can begin to understand what they're experiencing.
Exactly. And no, you're exactly right. And that's why, as I said, talking in any opportunity I have about what the distinctions are, because unfortunately what's happening, and this is happening globally, and actually I was just involved in a conversation yesterday about this, is that because the information is getting mixed up, and because unqualified people are grouping imposter syndrome just in with standard self-doubt, or they're making imposter syndrome a bit of a buzzword, which has good and bad traits. It's good that we're talking about it, but it's not great that it's a buzzword, because it loses the fact that it's actually can be all consuming, which you just said it perfectly. So we need to know the distinction, because what's happening is then people are grouping it together. In comes the dialogue, oh, we all feel like imposters sometimes, or we all do this. And it's, firstly, it's incorrect. And secondly, it confuses the audience and the people who really need the help. So if you're experiencing imposter syndrome, you need help with your imposter syndrome. You don't need someone telling you, oh, we all doubt ourselves, don't worry about it, brush yourself off, it'll go away. I wish. That doesn't. And so overcoming imposter syndrome is a process. And I don't want people to be frightened of that word process, because sometimes it can take a few weeks just to shift gears and go through the process. Sometimes it can take women several months, but whatever your journey, it's unique to you, your situation, your circumstance, your triggers, etc. But there's more than light at the end of the tunnel. We can get through this, we can learn to manage it, but yeah, we don't want people just sweeping it up, you know, under the carpet of, oh, we all doubt ourselves, just move on, if you truly believe you're experiencing it. And so when, like anything, you know, like your work, Kirsten, when we're thinking about mindfulness, we're talking about anxiety or things like that, we all need to be very careful where we get our information from. We need to look at the sources of who's talking about this stuff, you know, are they qualified, or what's their experience to talk about it? Because if you need help with imposter syndrome, you need help from people who can help you. And there's also plenty of great free resources out there as well. By no means do you have to pay someone to help you. But what we don't want to do is just listen to the personal opinions that are out there and, you know, and sort of latch onto that. So we just need to be aware, like anything important in our lives, of what content we're taking in, you know, so we can get the help that we need in whatever forum we want to get it in, but as long as it's from someone who can truly help you.
100%. And as we've said a few times, the first step is always self-awareness. Mm. So many times we are not self-aware to ourselves. And so if someone is listening right now and they're beginning to have like little light bulbs go off and they really feel like, oh, that's me. And their self-awareness around this is just starting to deepen a little bit. What are your tips for starting to, I suppose, like feel like, okay, this is where I'm at, and how can I start to heal it, recover from it, overcome it, and build some more confidence?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the first thing that you need to do, so you're exactly right. So we want that awareness. So imposter syndrome, as I mentioned earlier, affects up to around 70% of people. So if you're listening to this and you're experiencing imposter syndrome, you are not alone. But the thing is because of the nature of imposter syndrome, we get frightened to talk about it, right? But there's so much power in talking about it and sharing your story and having that awareness, because if you're listening to this, if you're experiencing imposter syndrome, just be aware, know that it's a thing with a name that's been researched for more than 50 years. It's been around for a long time. A lot of people experience it. And what I want you to do is own that and lean in and go, right, my imposter syndrome's been triggered. I know what it is. I can't stop it now, but I can make a decision on what I'm going to do next. So the awareness is key. The second tip I recommend for anyone listening to this is to identify your trigger. Everybody's trigger to imposter syndrome is different, although sometimes you can share similar triggers to other people. I'll give some examples of triggers in a moment, but I want you to think about the times. Everyone who's listening, grab, you know, pen and paper or a post-it or your phone or whatever you want. I want you to think about the time, the last time you felt like an imposter or felt this feeling and fear. And I want you to think about where you were, who you were with, what happened, did someone say something to you, were you offered an opportunity, like what was the trigger that set off these feelings? Because it's really important that we know that, so then you can determine how to intercept and kind of redirect those feelings. Can you remove yourself from that position or conversation next time, or can't you? So how do we have to deal with it differently? So identify your trigger. Is it something from your childhood that you've carried through? Is it a situation at work or someone who said something to you? Is it because you work in a male-dominated environment and as a woman, you feel like you don't have a voice or a seat at the table? You know, are you the first in your family to do something, or are you in the minority through, again, gender, ethnicity, sexual orientation, or something that makes you feel like an imposter? Are you lacking in confidence? So that's just the core trigger of, you know, your confidence is down, so you constantly feel like you're not worthy. So they're just some examples of common triggers, but by no means are they all the triggers. So identify a trigger, write it down so we can start to understand that. Then the third step is I want you to then think about how you're self-sabotaging when you're triggered. So common self-sabotaging behavior of imposter syndrome is we procrastinate, or we ruminate for too long, so we overthink. We engage in negative self-talk, so that story we keep telling ourselves, I have no value to add, I can't speak up, I couldn't possibly lead this team, I'm not qualified, I can't take on that project or new job because they're going to know I'm a fraud. So I want you to tap in to, you know, are you procrastinating? Are you engaging in negative self-talk? You know, are you trying to be a perfectionist and be perfect at everything you do because you don't want to be exposed? So what behavior is coming off the back of that trigger, right? So I want you to write that down, because if we know what behavior we're doing, then we can figure out ways to intercept and change that behavior. So then the fourth step from that, right, is to then look at those behaviors and that negative story or what you're engaging in, and work out ways that we can intercept it. So how do we change the story you're telling yourself? You know, how do we link it back to the evidence of really what's going on? So this is where we want to kind of rewrite our story and what we're telling ourselves, so we can redirect the behavior, which is the self-sabotaging behavior I mentioned to you, and we can figure out what we're going to do next, right? So we want to come up with some action points of how we can avoid doing that self-sabotaging behavior. So if you're procrastinating because you're stuck and your fear of failing, or you're fearing someone's going to know that you're a fraud, I want you to write down some ways that you can stop that procrastination. Can you do a different task in your day to get you back working in momentum? Can you delegate some pieces off of your current task? Can you ask somebody for help? So we want to break this self-sabotaging cycle, right, is the other step. And then the final step is build a support crew. So these are the same. And what I mean by that is surround yourself with people that you're comfortable in talking to about your imposter syndrome. You know, it could be a friend, a partner, someone at work. It could be your boss that you're comfortable in speaking to, you know, or your friend that you have a wine with on a Friday night. You could seek a coach or a mentor. You can jump online now and read a bunch of great literature around imposter syndrome and do some reading. So there's great free tools and free ways you can soak up information or speak to people around you. So they're the main steps that I wanted to share with you all today, right, is have that awareness. Know that you're not alone. Know that it has a name and it's okay because you can get through it, right? Identify your trigger. Write it down. Identify how you're self-sabotaging. What are you doing that's blocking yourself from moving forward, right? Again, write down some steps of how you can get around that self-sabotaging behavior. What's one step you can take? And the final one again is start talking to people, one person, two people, five people, find a crew, find great literature that's out there, reach out to me for a chat, whomever it is. But they're the starting tips I wanted to share with you, Kirsty, today and your listeners, because that's the start of the process. But if we can get sort of clear on those aspects, you know, write them down, then we're in a really good starting position, right, to move forward. And depending on who you are, what your trigger is, and how long you've been suffering imposter syndrome will determine your journey to overcome it.
That's valuable tips. Thank you.
Thank you. I was nodding my head as you were going through them, because it's funny, I share a weekly mantra on my Instagram for people to, you know, guide their practice. And the mantra this week is, I know I have the power to change my story.
Yes.
Really exploring into triggers, yes, and how we, exactly what you're saying, really, I've been helping people in my community to understand how they're self-sabotaging, because yes, quite often those behaviours we don't realise are related to the trigger and the story that we're choosing to tell. So when you were saying that, I was like, oh, resonates.
And that's why I love, you know, again, I'm so happy to be having this chat with you, because I love the work that you're doing, and I know there's great alignment there. And often when we're speaking about imposter syndrome, a lot of people are very quick to take someone to the negative story. So when we're suffering imposter syndrome, as you know, we have this what I call automatic negative story, right? So it's you constantly telling yourself, you know, that you can't do it, or why you're not good enough, or, you know, everyone's got their own story. And it is important that we understand the story and we look to kind of reframe that and link it back to the evidence of how we got where we are, and basically correct that story by retelling ourselves a positive affirmation, the correct story that's based on evidence. But before we even get to the story, we've got a trigger. And so that's why in the work that I do, the first thing I say, anyone I'm speaking to about imposter syndrome, if they come to me or a coaching client, speaker role, I say to them, what's your trigger? So, you know, for anyone listening to this, yeah, that first valuable step is, you know, obviously hearing this, you'll know whether or not you're suffering from imposter syndrome, but identify your trigger. Because if we know what that start is, and it might be multiple triggers, is the other thing I wanted to say. So, you know, something that triggered you 5 years ago might not be the same trigger that has triggered you this year. Triggers can change as you grow as a person, as your career changes, your family changes, your situation changes. So identify a trigger or triggers, because all the great information, you know, there's so much power in knowing the trigger, and then obviously moving to the story. Yeah, as you have said, and it's really important. So I take people right back to tell me when this started, When was the first time you felt this way? Where were you? What happened? What started it? Were you speaking with somebody else? Was it your parents? Was it your boss? Like, tell me everything. And I want to hear the whole scenario, because once I hear that as a sort of a trained, you know, coach and specialist in this area, I immediately know what steps will be best for that individual to start with. But the steps I've given all of you today listening to this are great steps for everyone, no matter what stage you're in, because it'll give you clarity over these sort of starting steps of your imposter syndrome. And as you know, in your work, we've got clarity, we've got confidence, because we know. So we need clarity to build stronger confidence. And when we're clear, we can determine the next steps better. You know, when things are all in our head or we're confused or overwhelmed, it's much harder to make good decisions.
Yes. And I think step four is so important as well. When you're doing this type of work and you're looking at triggers, you're doing that deep inner work, even of looking at how you have been self-sabotaging, because that can be confronting, as you would know. It's so important as well in the part of then doing the work to evolve and heal, is having that support network as well, of having, even if it is, like you said, just one person, but knowing that that's one person you can lean on and talk to about this. Because I think when we talk about these things too, it takes away their power, because when we leave it in our own heads, it's, as we know, our minds can really work against us. Our self-talk can be vicious. And having sometimes you just need that little cheerleader to remind you that, no, you've got this, you can do it.
Absolutely. And there's so much, I mean, you're exactly right. There's just so much value. And I mean, I wouldn't be where I am today. And I'm sure, you know, you would agree to, without my network and the network I've continued to build. And when I say network, people can have small networks, large networks. It depends on the individual and what you're comfortable with. But we need to surround ourselves with the right people, especially if we're experiencing imposter syndrome, because yes, people that we can talk to, you know, whether it's a light chat or a deep chat, just getting it, you said it beautifully, getting it out of your mind and either, you know, down on paper or into a conversation. And because there's so much clarity that comes from speaking out loud. So when we verbalize or when we write down and we get it out of our head, there's real power in that. Sometimes we immediately get clarity. We go, oh gosh, now that I've written it down. Yeah, you know, so if we're telling ourselves a negative story, right, and we've all been there, write that negative story down, right? Once you start writing it down on paper, or even something that I do with my clients is, you know, and this is something when I've been trained in media and other things, is say it out loud to yourself in the mirror. Now, this one is a big step. So not everybody's ready for it. So either start by writing down the negative story or look at yourself in the mirror if you're ready and you think you can do this, and say it to yourself out loud. Because when we verbalize or when we write, we change. It gives us an ability to change perspective very quickly and really go, God, like, I can't believe I'm speaking to myself.
Like, 100%.
The inner dialogue can get nasty, right? And it can spiral. As we know, we can go to a really dark place, right? And I've been there as well. But when you start verbalizing, you start writing it down, or you say to your friend or partner or whomever, someone you trust, and say, this is what's going through my head, you know, there's so much power. So I really encourage all of you to find that support crew, the one person, the 10 people, whoever it is, and start talking about it, because you are not alone when it comes to imposter syndrome, which is obviously, you know, what we're talking about today. And then those skills are transferable into many, many other areas, you know. So it's get it out of our head is my takeaway tip.
I mean, it does really take the power away when you write or verbalize. I agree, because it gives you that perspective to look at it almost from an outsider's point of view too, because you are reading back or you're hearing it and think, oh, it's terrible what I'm saying to myself. How do I, you know, it sort of like enables you to activate that compassion. But, and you would sort of probably see this, people really struggling with imposter syndrome and that feeling where they do not feel worthy. That's when you feel like isolating the most and disconnecting from community, from friends, from loved ones.
Would you agree?
Yes, because you, yes, I would, because you feel stuck.
Yeah.
So that's the bit that I, so when you're experiencing imposter syndrome, it impacts you in, I think this is a great way to say it for your listeners as well, is it gets you in two main ways. And what I mean by that is the first way is you're able to push on with imposter feelings, do your job, go after the success or the result that you want. But when you get it, you feel relief rather than joy. You feel like, oh, I've just faked my way or done some fraudulent measures to get to this. You know, they haven't found out yet that I'm a fraud. So you don't get to enjoy your success. You don't get to own it, right? And you constantly feel like you're never going to be able to replicate it. So what happens is cortisol goes through the roof. We're highly stressed all the time. We're down on ourselves all the time. So we don't really get the acknowledgement. So we get stuck. And on the flip side, the other way it affects you is it holds you back. So you're blocked from performing. You're blocked from taking the promotion or the role. You're blocked from launching your own business or seeking help, you know, from building a support crew around you. So either way, you're suffering and you're stuck, to your point. So it's a really big thing to want to get a hold of and to understand. And to everyone listening to this, ask yourself, are you suffering imposter syndrome where you're constantly pushing through but you never feel joy, you're not owning your success, you're not celebrating your wins, you're constantly stressed out, pushing yourself to burn out and things like that? Or are you sitting there listening to this going, oh my God, this is holding me back from launching my side hustle, going for that promotion, saying yes to lead that project? So either way, you're stuck because you're stuck in a pattern of not enjoying, not understanding, not lowering your stress levels. It's funny, not funny, but it's not a great place to be. Or you're not actually doing what you want because you're stuck and you're fearful and you can't. So that's just something I wanted to share with you too on that. Are the two ways it can impact you based on, again, personality, situation, circumstance, right? We've all got stuff going on in our lives. We're not all the same, but they're the two ways. And yeah, you get stuck. You get stuck and no good comes from being stuck. In fact, as you'd know in your work, the more stuck we are, what happens? We just start to go backwards, don't we? Negative voice gets louder, overwhelm gets bigger. All of a sudden, everything in your life becomes overwhelming or a problem, and you just get buried, and it's not a great place. It is a dark place at times.
I do find it valuable that you brought up the fact that you don't experience joy. That's really important too, because exactly when we're stuck, we sort of become numb almost to higher emotions because we don't feel like we're worthy of them. And that's an interesting thing because I never thought of it that way, as feeling relief if you do actually get the promotion or you do actually achieve some sort of success in what you're doing. It's a relief and not a joy or a happiness.
That's right, because if you've got imposter syndrome, even if you have a moment of joy, it's very fleeting, but often it's not there because it's more relief. But then your mind quickly turns to, well, how am I going to do it again? Or how am I going to keep up this level of success? Or I just, you know, got myself here. They don't know I'm a fraud yet, but if I take the next step. So again, that internal negative dialogue of feeling like, even though you just worked your bum off to get that next step, you don't enjoy it because you feel like you've just basically bought yourself more time to not be exposed as a fraud. So again, this is linking it back to imposter syndrome. And for everyone listening to this, hopefully, you know, obviously the longer we speak, they can see that it's beyond just standard self-doubt. It's beyond just, oh, can I can't I do this? Look, I'm not sure, you know, I might pass on this opportunity. Then you go back to with standard self-doubt, doing what you were doing. Or sure, you might have missed out on an opportunity, but you're not doubting everything else. You're not plagued by this constant fear of being found out by a fraud. You're not going through exactly the same self-sabotaging behaviors as those with imposter syndrome have. So, you know, it is a new level, it is a different level, and we don't know when we're going to be triggered. right? We don't
100%. Yeah.
We just don't know. We don't know what's around the corner. But back to what you were saying earlier around the awareness piece, it's important because if and when we are triggered, so when whoever listens to this podcast and then later, if you're triggered in 6 months' time, now you'll be able to go, oh my goodness, okay, this is imposter syndrome. Okay, what just happened? Well, you know, again, this situation, this person or whatever. So there's real power in that, owning it. In the words of, you know, Sheryl Sandberg, who wrote a wonderful book called Lean In, it's just to channel her words, I want you to lean in to imposter syndrome. So I want anyone listening to this or my clients, they've got imposter syndrome, I want you to lean into it. I want you to own it. Know that it affects a lot of people because it's what you do next that matters, not the fact that you were triggered, because a lot of us are with you on that. But you've got tremendous power, more than you realize, over the next step that we take. So that next step is about trying to avoid the self-sabotage, or if we're
love it,
trying to get out of it as quickly as we can, right? So and you mentioned self-compassion before, but yeah, being kind to ourselves, it's a process, right? Like everything else, we need to work on it. But again, that core trigger, lean into it. Don't run away from imposter syndrome. We want to own it, right? You're experiencing it for a reason. Let's own it, then let's pull it apart and find a way through it. And that's the system. That's what we do. We want to grab it, lean into it, pull it apart so it doesn't take over us.
Amazing.
We want to break it apart, right? Before it takes over us. We might not stop it from coming, but we can stop or intercept, I like to say sort of intercept and redirect what it's going to do to us.
I think that's an important mindset to have, is that, you know, we're always going to be triggered, but it's then what happens after the trigger. So instead of the self-sabotaging behaviours, we actually have habitually built in some, you know, ways that we can deal with that trigger, move forward, move in presence, you know, develop a more positive mindset, develop that confidence, then we're more resilient to our triggers. And that's the important thing. You know, we are not perfect humans. And that's, I think once we embrace that too, we are always going to have things that trigger us somewhere. Something's going to happen.
Absolutely. And I mean, you said it perfectly, and that's right. When it comes back to imposter syndrome in particular, we won't always see, even if we know our trigger, so even if something triggered us last week and we know what that trigger was, if it triggers us again next week, we won't see that coming. We can't see the future, right? We don't know the exact moment that we're going to be in. But yes, to your point, each time we build that resilience, we know what it is. And so what happens for everyone listening to this is you get to a point where I am, or I get my clients where their imposter syndrome is triggered and they go, oh, there's imposter syndrome, right? What's happened? X has happened. Okay, I'm going to make sure I don't do Y self-sabotaging behavior. I need to now change my direction, or actually need to just step away and give myself a couple of hours to digest this. Maybe I need to sleep on this, wake up tomorrow, process it then. So you start to build in these nice little intercepts to be able to go, okay, it's there. I can't stop it. It's happened. But how am I going to deal with it? Well, I'm going to take action right now. Or as I said, I'm going to go get a coffee and some fresh air, or I'm going to sleep on it because this sort of trigger's really bothered me. I just need 24 hours to just, you know, reset, go home, calm down, et cetera. And then I'm going to start again tomorrow. So you build this wonderful little mental system that starts to happen where you intercept it, right? So it hits you, but you intercept the self-sabotaging behavior and then you redirect it, which is how I talk about it in my work. So we direct it into a more positive, practical action, and that builds confidence. As you know, in your work, confidence is built off action. We must be doing something to build confidence. And what happens when we do one thing and we get a little confidence boost? We're more inclined to do the next and the next.
100%. Yeah.
All the feel good hormones, as you know, in your work.
Yeah. And
great, cool. I'm moving forward here. This is wonderful. So it's all a process. Don't shy away from the process. There is joy. This is what I like to share as well. There's joy in the process. There's learning in the process. There's growth. in the process. So let's lean into it, not run away from it if you believe you're
From it. And growth is uncomfortable. And that's okay.
I know. And which is funny, right? Because that's what makes it so wonderful. But yeah, I really wanted to share that with your audience today is lean in, own it, go, right, I've been triggered for a reason, and let's move to owning what our next steps are as well. Because if we don't take control of imposter syndrome, it absolutely takes control of us. And that's why I'm on an absolute mission in the work that I do. And I've dedicated practically my entire business to this topic, because it's a big topic, it's layered, it's deep. I've been working with or on imposter syndrome for nearly 8 years. Right. Still reading literature, still researching, still working with clients, still hearing new scenarios, still it's evolving.
Mm. Right. I have really appreciated your expertise in this area and the clarity that you've given. And I think that you've really been able to identify for people listening what imposter syndrome is and take around any sort of doubt about what it may or may not be, because it is a bit confusing sometimes. It's like anything, you hear a term thrown around, and I think that those tips that you have given people to start to overcome it are just so valuable and so insightful. So I'm incredibly grateful for your time, and I would love to talk to you for hours and dive into confidence and lots of other things.
But I'm sure we can, I feel like I can talk to you for hours. I know. Thank you for that feedback, by the way. I really appreciate it.
And so if people want to know more about imposter syndrome and more about what you do, where can they find you on social media or your website?
Yep, I'm on both, actually. So you can find me, it's nice and easy, alisonshamir.com or alisonshamir across Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn are the three platforms. I'm nice and easy to find. And if you're interested in sort of free tips and insights, I have a weekly newsletter which is sent every Friday around lunchtime. So you can sign up for that via my website. And that's a great way for me to give really valuable content, tips, tools, methods, anything I think is valuable to the audience. And obviously it's completely free. And you can read about my work across those platforms. And obviously I share lots of insights there as well. And anything I can that can really, empower anyone who's watching or listening to that with what they need to really, build confidence, overcome imposter syndrome. And, my mission is all about helping women present and perform at their best without those two internal barriers of lack of confidence or imposter syndrome holding them back. So please come find me, shoot me a message, say hi. If you've got any questions, please send them through in whatever forum suits you. I would be happy to answer them.
That sounds great. And I always like to end just to get to know you a little bit more. I have to know, is there a book that you keep going back to that you have read over and over?
That's a great question. No, I wouldn't say that I've read over and over. I like to capture lots of different perspectives, but I'm certainly an avid reader, books and also Audible as well, which I love. But look, there's been some phenomenal books written on imposter syndrome as well. But a great book, I'll give you two actually recommendations. So one's called The Confidence Code, which is a wonderful book written by two journalists out of America. Highly recommend this book. It will blow your mind, or everyone who does read it, on confidence. It includes some science behind confidence. It's just a wonderful book. And in terms of imposter syndrome, Dr. Sandy Mann is her name, has written a great book on imposter syndrome and why we feel like imposters. So Dr. Sandy Mann is someone whose work I would recommend as well, and also Dr. Valerie Young on imposter syndrome. So they've written some great books and have some great literature around it. So, and look, lots of people have, but they're probably just in the context of this conversation, there's some great pieces in those. But those three books and those authors, really wonderful.
Oh, I'm going to look up the confidence code. You've got me intrigued. Yeah. I haven't heard of it.
It would be one of the best books. Obviously, I've read, you know, that literature. I've actually read those books many a times. Yeah. Over, but to the original question, I read a lot of different things. I love different perspectives. I love to hear from people around, of course, those two topics, self-sabotage, personal development, you know, perspective, mindset. So Carol Dweck actually wrote a book called Mindset. She was kind of the sort of first main author to write about that. You might have heard of that one, but I'm a fan of many different perspectives, and then obviously contextually looking at that and thinking, right, what do I get out of that? Does it relate to me or not? So I'm very open in consuming lots of credible, of course, that I think is credible sort of literature or topics, and I think that that empowers me, and then I can also take that knowledge forward to anyone that I'm speaking to or coaching as well. But there's some great
recommendations. Oh, love it. Well, I'm going to get straight onto Google after this. So thank you. I always love to find out about new books.
No, thank you for asking. That's a really good question. So, but yeah, they're definitely the main ones I would say today.
Well, wonderful. Thank you so much for your time, Alison. I have so enjoyed this and I've learned a lot, which is always a bonus.
Oh, likewise. Well, thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I really appreciate the invitation.
Thanks so much for listening. And if you loved this episode, I would be so grateful if you could take the time to leave me a 5-star review and share this with your friends and family. I really appreciate you being here with me. And if you'd like to know more about what I do and for some free resources, please head on over to my website, teamko.com.au, and you can connect with me over on social media at Meditate with Kirstie.